Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Bethany Gilbert, and I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune of Coram Deo Church. And Coram Deo Church's intern, Travis Barrett, sitting in for the quarantined Dusty White. And Pastor Chris Hemmelman of First City Church. Every Wednesday, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. Today, we're talking about prudence in the pandemic.
Hello, everyone, listeners and fellow contributors. Travis, good to have you here.
Good to be here.
We are tackling this topic based on an article in the October 2020 issue of First Things, written by Rob Kuhns. Rob Kuhns is actually an acquaintance of mine. He is a philosophy professor at the University of Texas. Has been there a long time. And when I was doing campus ministry at the University of Texas, Dr. Kuhns would occasionally, like, he would come and speak at our campus ministry meetings. He helped to host the Veritas Forum, which was sort of a bringing in Christian speakers on issues of intellectual interest. And so our paths have crossed in the past. And I like Rob Kuhns because he's a public intellectual and a Christian. So he's working in philosophy at the University of Texas, which is not a friendly place toward Christian convictions. But Rob is a tenured professor there, has been doing good philosophical work there for years. And this is a really interesting article. He's writing, the subtitle of it is Robert C. Kuhns Outlines a Moral Approach to Public Health. So the question he's asking is, hey, how should we adjudicate, how should we think about questions of public health? The pandemic has obviously put these things front and center. And so what he wants to suggest is that the category of prudence, the virtue of prudence, gives us a way of assessing and evaluating moral questions within the pandemic that is distinct and unique from other approaches. And so he's asserting that, hey, Christians should really embrace prudence as a way of thinking through questions of public health. And Rob Kuhns wants to suggest it helps give us a way forward. So let me lay out briefly the article he writes. He says there are three basic situations in moral life. On the one hand, there are prohibitions, things we should not do. These are things like you should not murder, steal, lie, etc. And he says, now sometimes we have questions about does evading an answer count as a lie? So sometimes our moral questions fall in the category of, does this fit in the category of prohibition? But the first broad category in our moral life is prohibitions, things we should not do. Then there are obligations, things we should do. We should honor our parents. We should care for those who are dependent upon us. He says, as important as they are to the moral life, these two types of situations make up a small fraction of all the situations that confront us. The number of moral questions that are clear prohibitions or clear obligations is quite small. He says most of our big questions fall into the category of prudence, which is situations where we are asked to discern the best course of action and to take it. Here are some examples he gives. Should I increase my weekly donation to my church, or should I put the money into an account to pay college tuition for my children? Should I attend grad school in philosophy, or should I go to law school? Should we take our vacation to the Rocky Mountains, or should we go east to visit family? He's saying these are examples of where a prudential judgment is required. I need to discern what's the best course of action in this situation. I'm weighing competing goods. He says most issues of public health fall into this third category because there are not clear answers. So here's some examples. How much of the public purse should be spent on fighting a disease? To what extent should the normal functions of society be suspended? When is it fitting to suspend civil liberties for the sake of policies that may save lives? And he says neither prohibitions nor positive duties provide much guidance here. These are situations where we have to make trade-offs. We have to weigh certain goods against other goods. And so now that he's set up those categories, he's going to say now in these decisions where we have to make trade-offs, there are three basic things that are being proposed out there in the realm of public health. And this is really interesting because it's going to get very nitty-gritty into things we're hearing and reading and talking about all the time in the midst of a pandemic. He says, on the first hand, there's what he calls the sentimentalist view. And the sentimentalist view is, under no circumstances should we put anyone's life at risk. So it is always intrinsically evil to act with the knowledge that one is putting another's life at risk. This is the, you sort of hear the refrain out there in debates about the pandemic to say, hey, if anyone else dies, we can't, we absolutely can't be in a situation where there are any more deaths with this. Kuhn suggests that moral position is impossible to maintain with consistency. And he uses an analogy, a different kind of moral situation that I think is helpful. He says, commanding troops in battle is a particularly clear instance of putting the lives of others at risk. You might say, okay, well, that's war. It's different. Well, here's another one. A crew boss knows that workplace accidents occur. Hospital administrators know that healthcare workers sometimes catch diseases from patients. Driving a car entails the witting acceptance of the statistical risk of causing an accident. So he's saying there actually are all kinds of situations where we know that at some level, probably a very minuscule level, there's risk involved that could lead to the death of another person. And so he says this hard fact about the human condition puts us in what seems an impossible dilemma. If we affirm the infinite value of all human life, then we seem committed to ruling out all trade-offs, and life becomes a series of tortured and impossible demands to avoid any risk to the life of another. So that's the first approach we could take in a pandemic, is to be sentimentalist and say, hey, in no way should we create any kind of risk to the life of another person. He says there's another approach called the calcularist approach, and I don't know if that's a word he made up. I've never heard the word calcularist before, but you can hear how it's kind of like calculator. What he's saying is these are people who want to say, hey, we got to weigh certain things. And so let's count up how many people might die of this disease versus how many people could die of mental health issues if we have a lockdown. And then you sort of do the crude math and say, well, we're going to take this risk over that one. And he says there are two problems with that. One is that it just doesn't feel very humane. No one wants to reduce our moral decision-making to calculations of, how many people are going to die in this scenario, how many people are going to die in that scenario. And also that it requires a view from nowhere. It requires some detached way of observing and weighing between these things that implies that we can have a perspective that's like hovering in space without anything personally at stake. And that's not real. So he says there's a third way between these two ways. And that third way is the way of prudence. And this is rooted in the classical tradition and the Christian tradition. And what prudence does is it lets us sort of chart a middle way between these two, because prudence says, hey, actually, every life is infinitely valuable because we hold that human beings are made in the image of God, and therefore life is of infinite value. However, at the same time, prudence also acknowledges the need to make moral decisions where risk is involved. And so prudence leads us to sort of evaluate the common good in terms that are broader than just the prevention of death. Let me read a couple lines from Kuhn's here that I think will be helpful. The common good of a community is not the aggregate of the individual or private goods of its members. It concerns the flourishing of civil society as such. This is an important consideration, for my life is a private good, just as the life of another is a private good. As a consequence, saving the most lives does not automatically correspond to promoting the common good. At the outset of the pandemic, civic leaders emphasized the need to prevent hospitals from being overwhelmed. This made good sense because a functional health system is a common good. It serves our shared interests in ensuring that citizens receive good care should they fall sick. But then the emphasis shifted to saving lives. This is surely important, but the constraints of the possible are not in this context technical. The common good of public health no more requires that every death be prevented than the common good of economic security requires that every bankruptcy be prevented. So what he's saying is prudence allows us to differentiate private goods from common goods or public goods and say there are situations where, for the sake of the public good, we know that we have to put private goods at risk. And again, war is the best scenario of this, right? For the sake of the public good of a peaceful and just society, there are times where we ask soldiers to put their private lives at risk, the private good of their own livelihood at risk, for the sake of securing the public good of peace. And so he says this is rooted in the classical tradition. It's reasonable, he says, for the state to ask individuals to give their lives in defense of their country. This is why we honor policemen and firemen who risk their lives to serve the public. Even if some individual lives must be lost in order to sustain a well-functioning society ordered toward the common goods, then their deaths are not signs of an immoral political order. In other words, what he's saying is it's morally good and right for certain people to put their lives at risk to serve the public. Now, again, he's using all these analogies of war and police and fire because they're ones that make sense to us. All right. Now, here's how he's going to try to apply it now to questions of the pandemic. All right. So now he's going to try to apply this model to the very interesting question we're all in the middle of right now, which is how do you weigh various public health interventions in the midst of a pandemic? So things like, should we have lockdowns and questions like that. He suggests that this consideration of prudence acknowledges both the infinite value of life and the real limitations we face in saving lives. And these considerations can be applied to the question of choosing between an expensive lockdown and running the risk of additional COVID deaths. And so what he suggests is the way prudence allows us to sort of navigate that territory is to say it allows us to ask deeper questions than merely will any lives be lost. So here's an example, he says. The COVID virus seems to strike hardest to those with lower life expectancy. So the number of human years involved is smaller. At the same time, we're talking about imminent deaths from the virus and not merely the loss of future life expectancy. So the order of scarcity would increase the value of adding those years. On the whole, the dangers posed by the disease suggest a mixed judgment, not a clear imperative. The precautionary principle applies in both directions. It seems wise to take extreme measures to ensure against extreme threats. At the same time, a prolonged lockdown is an unprecedented experiment on a massive scale. We cannot calculate with any confidence the impact it will have on our social and political institutions. And what he wants to say, he doesn't actually answer a ton of the questions. He's not trying to answer, should we have a lockdown or not? What he's trying to say is, here's a framework that forces us to ask a different set of questions. And so here's what he says. Clarity about these matters is of vital importance as we look back on our approaches to the pandemic and as we look ahead to measures that may be necessary in the future. There is a danger that the voice of sentiment will predominate, demanding that we sacrifice everything to minimize the number killed by the virus. The voice of calculation points to the self-contradictions into which sentiment casts us, but in attaining consistency, it sacrifices our humanity, forcing us to make invidious distinctions among persons. We must attune our hearing instead to the still, small voice of prudence. So, as a quick summary, the way prudence applies here is to give us the category of the common good, which gives us a different set of criteria by which to weigh the kinds of trade-offs we have to make in a decision like this. I thought this article was really helpful as I read it, y'all, just to frame up a way of thinking about this, because I feel like this is a question I've had. It's like, well, I mean, how do we know what the right public health decisions are? Because every state is making different ones, right? And different cities are doing different things. And it feels like it's kind of a free-for-all. Different governments are doing different things. How do you know what's right, what's wrong, what's good, what's bad, what's too much, what's not enough? And I have increasingly heard sort of those two, the sentimentalist voice and the calcularist voice, sort of saying, hey, we shouldn't do anything that puts anyone's life at risk, or, hey, we have to, you know, the economic benefits matter more than the health realities. And this article gave a third category that was helpful to me to say, oh, yeah, the doctrine of prudence, the virtue of prudence, does give us a whole different way of weighing and analyzing the kinds of trade-offs we have to make.
But no easy answers.
No easy answers.
Yeah. What I liked about this article is he wasn't, here's all the prescriptions based on prudence. It's like, this is a framework in which to make decisions and think through this, rather than which the other two approaches seem to kind of lead to sort of like declarations of this is the way it should be done, where prudence, it's the better way, but it's also the harder way because it doesn't give you just necessarily this clear-cut answer or a one-size-fits-all approach. The other thing that struck me is how much the prudence model recognizes our inability to control all variables, where the other two approaches seem to be, hey, if we take the sentimentalist approach, hey, we can control how many people die or the sort of the unintended consequences. Let's shut down our economy. Let's do lockdown and we'll just pay everybody's wages. We'll just, you know, like there's this sense that we can control the outcome and vice versa. If we just sort of take this utilitarian approach, we can kind of control the balance of effect on society. And so I think one thing that there's a humility in the prudence model that recognizes the reason we need to use prudence is because we recognize we can't control. And so our careful weighing of these various factors as we try to make decisions is an important part of how we make the decision.
Why do you think that voice is less heard out there in the public square?
Oh, I mean, I think it's because of what we've talked about before on the podcast, just our collective social anxiety. We don't like not having this sense of control, and we run to what seemed very kind of like solid data driven, like here's we're going to do this and here's how we're going to control it and here's how we're going to fix it. And I think those two options seem to offer more security in our strategies than the prudence. And not to say that the prudence doesn't offer wise, thoughtful, helpful strategies forward, but there is a sense where there's less of a declarative certainty about what we're going to do. I mean, I even think of, okay, Pete Ricketts, is he a perfect governor? No. But I think in a lot of ways, he's modeled some of this of not falling into one side or the other, but trying to walk with sort of a wise sense of what's best for the state of Nebraska. And so I've been even as cases have upticked, and hey, you might not agree with everything he's done. That's part of the prudential way of like, hey, there's room for argument and disagreement, but it seems like this sort of is going around in his mind and with the counsel he's receiving more so than the other two.
Prudence is a hard viewpoint to put on social media.
Yeah.
It doesn't lend itself to memes and simple argumentation.
Yeah.
It is interesting though that it would be interesting for our disagreements to be more about the prudential considerations instead of about the either or.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which feels like that's where I would want it. Like what should Christians who love the gospel be bringing to the equation in these conversations? It should be an ability to have disagreements that are based on the prudential calculations that we're making and not just this is right, this is wrong, which is even among really thoughtful people that I respect, I've kind of seen that simplicity in a way that just doesn't feel very appropriate to the situation that we're facing. Thoughts, Travis?
I love it. At the very end, when he's kind of summarizing himself, he says, the still small voice of prudence, which I think is just highlighting the difference between I don't know, the kind of loudness that both the other two, sentiment and calculation, kind of brings, like what you're talking about with social media, where prudence isn't, you're not going to see a bunch of memes about it of like, we need to be more prudent about this and think slowly. Like, nobody really says that. It's more a call to action immediately and not like a slow reflection of like, okay, let's weigh all the different variables. It's like, I mean, I really like how he says it's a still small voice.
I have been... He does a few things. Kuhns is a thoughtful philosopher because what he does that philosophers do well is to give you analogies. Here's a situation that will help you understand what I'm saying. So here's another analogy he makes in the article about how a prudential judgment would play into an ethical situation. He says, let's say you have a pregnant mom who has a cancerous tumor in her uterus. And so a doctor needs to do an operation. And the doctor knows in this operation, there's a chance this baby will die. However, if I don't do the operation, the mom is certainly going to die. So the doctor goes after this tumor and realizes he can't control perfectly the baby not dying. There is a risk to this child, but he has to do the surgery. And Kuhn says, if death is a foreseeable but unwanted consequence of my action, the action does not partake of moral evil. So he's saying that doctor is doing nothing morally evil by engaging in a surgery that he knows has a foreseeable result of this child dying, right? Because though it is a foreseeable consequence, it's an unwanted consequence. So he gives us that analogy to say, hey, in a similar way, as we think about public health decisions, right? Any decision that says, well, here's an intervention we're going to make that should help, but that won't head off all possibility of risk or all possibility of death. It's in a similar kind of situation where it's like, hey, death is still foreseeable. Like, certainly people could still die because a virus is still active in the world. However, if I'm wisely stepping in and saying, here's the action we're going to take in public health to try to mitigate those consequences, that's the kind of prudential decision that's in play. And it is interesting to me how frequently I've heard Christians pick up the logic of like, hey, if anyone dies, then we're not doing our job. Or like we can't be okay with any deaths. And I just think, well, I don't think the answer to that is to swing the pendulum the other way and to say, yeah, we should be fine with it because of the economy, right? Like, which is what some people have done. But I think there is this prudential thing that says, hey, look, there's no place in our lives where we can guarantee with certainty that there will be no adverse effects. And so likewise in a pandemic, though we're dealing with a massive social challenge, we have to apply the same principles and say, hey, we cannot make decisions based on how can we ensure that not another single person will die from this disease, because that's actually not within our control, as you already said.
Yeah, and the hubris of that, like it's such a collective arrogance to think we have that much control. Again, this doesn't minimize, we have to make hard decisions. These are not easy decisions for anybody. Whether you're making decisions for your own family and how you're choosing to live and calculate risk, or whether you're a public health official or a government leader. I mean, let's just all recognize and sort of have this collective empathy of this is not easy. But the moment we start with this arrogant sense of control and start making these declarative statements about this is what we must do, and if you don't see it this way, then you either hate people or you want to destroy the economy. It just becomes such a reactionary, prideful conversation that we just need to take a time out and go, hey, look, we're human, we're limited. Like, how would that move the conversation forward if there was this sense of humility and seeking to walk in wisdom? I mean, even you hear politicians, the way they talk about, we just came out of an election, and some politicians who ran on like, hey, we're going to do better with the pandemic. And it's like, okay, there's space where we can do better. But these like declarations of we're going to end this pandemic and we're going to, no one else is going to die, just like these crazy promises. And it's like, you know, that is impossible. And for you to sell that is ridiculous. But like you said, and you said, Travis, and you said, Bob, like that sort of slow down wise doesn't work on social media. It doesn't get you elected because people want these declared. They want to feel comforted. They want to feel certainty. They want to feel this sense of like, hey, we can do these very clear things, and this whole thing is over. And that just, it doesn't lead to good things. Even if the pandemic, we get a handle on the pandemic, quote unquote, the collective effect on society and our own souls and how we're shaped in that. I'm afraid for that aspect of it as well.
I think it's interesting that prudence also seems to have a certain intuitive component to it, meaning it's actually sort of natural law. Mm-hmm. When you think about back in the beginning of the pandemic, when the reasoning for the first set of lockdowns was, hey, based on what we're seeing, it's quite possible that our hospital system will be overwhelmed and there will not be the capacity to care for people who need it. I think everybody looked at that and said, okay, we got to do something, because we all know, gosh, if I get sick and I need to go to the hospital and I'm in need of critical medical care and there's no place for me to go, nobody wants to put themselves or their neighbor in that situation. So there's this sense of those kind of common good judgments, I think, intuitively make sense to us. And then likewise, when in the month of May or so, when that sort of first round of lockdowns started to get eased and we started to realize, hey, there's all these side effects of mental health issues. Like, we're all feeling isolated and very alone and very sort of frustrated. Like we all started to recognize, hey, now we're facing another set of circumstances that this has to your point, Chris, we couldn't foresee that coming, but now we're all acknowledging, yeah, there's some other things going on that don't seem good either. And so we sort of had to find that balance between how do we continue to manage an ongoing pandemic, but also take stock of the other factors of common good that really do matter, people's livelihoods, people's mental health, and so forth. And now that we're seeing an uptick again, you know, it's interesting to me that I think that that intuitive sense of prudence begins to come to the forefront again as people start to say, okay, we probably need some more public health interventions, but we have to be careful that we're weighing the factors adequately. And I do think it's interesting to your point, Chris, that the governments that seem to be trying to do that in some ham-handed fashion also get a lot of flack because it's like you're not doing A or B. Yeah. You know, you're not either like wide open or totally shut down. There's some middle ground that you're trying to find. Ricketts, how come you won't make us all wear masks? You know, he's getting a lot of pressure from people who feel like, well, there's one intervention that would just sort of be easy and sort of solve a bunch of stuff. But I do think it's interesting to see how you see these prudential concerns trying to be weighed even among local public health officials. And what Coons is saying is, hey, Christians should learn to think this way. We should be bringing this kind of heft to the conversation. So those Christians who are working in public health, who are working in the medical field, who have responsibility in government to speak into decisions like this, we should be bringing prudence with us as a framework for thinking about these decisions. And I want listeners who have those kinds of fields, who are invested in those kinds of decision-making bodies, to know that, hey, this is a place where you have an opportunity to bring something distinct from our tradition that does give us a unique way of evaluating these kinds of situations.
And like I said before, this requires a level of emotional maturity. Mm. This goes back to like the importance of those things, of that well-differentiated leader. For us to walk in prudence well, and that needs to be modeled. And so the church needs to be a place where that is valued. And as we enter into the public sphere, that we model that as well. So it's not just about an ethical framework. It also speaks to just even our own souls, the condition of our own souls. And can we walk with that tension and walk with that sense of peace when there is just chaos and fighting and extremism all around? So formed mentally, formed ethically, but also formed emotionally and spiritually in this too.
Final thoughts, everyone?
I have a thought. I don't know where this necessarily fits in this conversation, but like hearing you guys talk, I find this idea of prudence, I find it very intriguing and I want it, but I'm also like exhausted at the thought of it, because I mean, I was joking before we started recording, like I'm tired of talking about the pandemic. I'm tired of it taking up brain space. And in some ways I'm like, man, I like every day I have to make so many decisions about like, well, can I should I be going into work? Should I be going into work and wearing a mask? Should I not, you know, and all these, I don't know. Should I be going to church? Should I be going to the store? All of these things that I'm tired of making decisions. And I think a lot of other people are kind of like they're experiencing decision fatigue. And I'm just tired of thinking about these things. I want somebody to just make a decision for me and eliminate that fatigue from my life that I have to think about. But at some point, I'm just like, prudence seems great, but it seems like so much more work for me to do, to think about this more. And I'm already tired of it and I want to be done.
That decision fatigue is real. Mm-hmm. I think that's what everybody is sensing and feeling. And so I resonate with what you're saying. It seems like Coons is writing this article, not so much trying to give us more to think about, but to help Christians in who are making public health kinds of decisions to have a little bit of a framework for how to think through those things. But it's interesting that you say, because I'm wondering, do you feel like, Bethany, that someone making a decision, for instance, masks are required in all public places, does that actually take away any of that, or does it just kick it further down the road? Because as the pandemic continues to morph, mm-hmm. right, there's always a new set of decisions that are facing us that fall into this same category of, okay, well, now that we have that figured out,
yeah.
now what about, right, what about when I have people over to my house? What about vaccines and how that's going to roll out?
Yeah.
And so it seems like sometimes that decision fatigue can feel like, well, if someone would just tell me what to do, it'd be easier. But I'm not sure that actually gets
no,
us
that's
further
true.
Down the
road. Yeah. I definitely think it does kick it further down the road.
Well, and it seems like the value of Kunz's article here has less to do with the what and more to do with the why.
Yeah.
So the what, people might still make a decision of, here's the public health intervention we're going to do. But the why behind that being not simply, we can't have any more people die, but a more nuanced and thoughtful, hey, and this is what I think actually people want to hear, right? Mm-hmm. If you're going to tell me, hey, here's a mandate, you can't go into work, you can't have gatherings of more than such size people, you have to wear a mask, if people are going to mandate things that are society wide, I think that when those are backed up with simplistic reasoning, I think it feels to people like, well, that's not satisfying.
Mm-hmm.
When it's backed up with like, hey guys, we all recognize that we're dealing with a really complicated issue here, and so here's the best decision we've arrived at. Yeah. That makes me feel at least like, hey, I respect someone who is going to offer their reasoning in a way that makes me feel like, oh, you've thought through that in a careful way, and you're convinced that this is the right approach for us to take, and that's good. That seems wise and fair. And that's, I think, what the classical tradition has to offer us here is a way of establishing the why behind the what that hopefully stays out of really simplistic ways that only create further polarization. Because I think that's actually what's happening is you just have, you know, whether people want more intervention or less, it's just easy for this to become moralized of like, well, that's a bad reason, so I don't agree with it, you know, versus a careful kind of moral reasoning that even if I might disagree with the outcome or the conclusion, gives me a respect for the way the decision's been thought through. And in many ways, that's the job of a political or civic or social leader, is to be able to win people over to a set of decisions that might be unpopular, which is why politics is hard, Chris. You can't run on, hey guys, I'm going to make some decisions that's unpopular, but you're going to be happy about the way I reasoned through them. You don't hear campaign ads like that. Yeah. Well, if you want to read the article yourself, it's Prudence in the Pandemic, First Things from the October 2020 issue. They have a pretty thorough website, so I'm pretty sure you can just go Google that title and find the article. And hey, especially if you're a Christian who is politically or medically in a place where you're making sort of decisions for other people, not just your own family, but for any kind of social or public setting, I think you'll find this a helpful article. And I hope that listeners, even though many of us are tired in the ways Bethany explained, so maybe this is the episode you're like, I can't listen to another podcast about pandemics. But hopefully that listeners, this shows you how Christian moral reasoning applies to very real things in the world. And as we always say on this podcast, we're trying to talk about how the gospel applies to the situations of our actual lives. And this is certainly one of those that we're all living in right now. And so I hope you see how the theological tradition that we stand in bring something to bear in a moment like this that is really beautiful and unique and that can help us as we lead others.
The goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or a church leader in another context, we thank you for listening in. And we pray that this conversation might be helpful to you as you minister in your context. We'd love to hear from listeners, so if you have thoughts, questions, or future podcast topics, send an email to podcast@cdomaha.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next Wednesday for another episode of the Wednesday Conversation.